Hey, what's good? This is Rich.
And I'm Marcus.
And you're listening to the Paychecks and Balances podcast, where we have fun chopping it up about personal finance and career advice for millennials. Yes, we have fun talking about working money when we're not at work making money. It happens like that sometimes.
And today's episode is executively produced by PNB patrons Michael Minix and Morello. We're going to get that right, and I think she actually has corrected us once before. And if you'd like to learn more about becoming a PNB patron, visit paychecksandbalances.com/patron. And if you're a drinker, it's spelled like patron.
There we go. Also, don't forget to complete the first ever Paychecks and Balances audience survey. This is your chance to tell us who you are so we can help you where you are. So to complete that, visit paychecksandbalances.com/survey. It is still out there. Again, paychecksandbalances.com/survey with car dealership balloon hands flailing in the air.
And speaking of car ship dealer hands flailing in the air, my weekly unsolicited sponsorship, Patron, if you're out there listening, feel free to reach out to us. And as I drink some unknown yet delicious tea, I'm a tea drinker. If any tea drinking products would like to sponsor the show, please feel free to reach out to us by joining us on social media at Pay Balances on Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest. Yes, Pinterest. We don't have much there yet, but do follow us because that will change soon.
Bouse. And I was going to say for Morello, I think we can just say Mo, because I've seen this person on Twitter as well, and I think it just says Mo there. So let's just go with Mo S unless they tell us otherwise.
Ooh, I like it.
Anyway.
And today we're joined by Donovan Frost. Donovan runs the adaptableadult.com, which we'll discuss later in more detail in the show. But for starters, we actually met Donovan at FinCon. I was impressed by his maturity, or maybe depressed by my lack of maturity at his age. But either way, I thought his story was unique. I was happy to see a young man taking a proactive role in his finances at such an early age. Ladies, he's only 25 and single. I think we will be confirming and discussing that within the show. So we'll put his contact information in the show notes if you want to shoot your shot in the DMs.
Sorry, that's hilarious, man.
Yeah. Trying to help out. You know, I'm all about the people. So if I had done what he done, maybe I just would maybe not have gotten into $30,000 in debt, as I've talked about all over the place. The best strategy, folks, never get in debt in the first place. And so we brought Donovan on to discuss how the non-washed, that's the young folks on the right side of 30 for the non or the slang challenge, can improve and start their money management journey. So thanks for joining us, Donovan.
Thank you for having me, Marcus and Rich. Really appreciate it. Really enjoyed meeting you both at FinCon as well.
Yeah, it's dope, man. And I was going to say to Marcus, I see you trying to live vicariously through this brother, but I'm going to let you cook.
Is that what I'm doing? All right, man. Anyway, put me on Front Street. So Donovan, why don't I awkwardly change the conversation here? Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, I'm 25. I grew up in L.A., currently living here right now. Went to school, San Diego State University, go Aztecs. I started a personal finance blog about back in April of this year. So it's going, you know, where I talk about millennials and managing their money and being smart about debt and credit cards and, you know, kind of investing, starting to invest and just kind of learning the ropes of all this complicated money world that we got going on here. In my spare time, I really, really enjoy traveling, which we'll talk about in a bit. And that's kind of where I splurge, right, on travel. But, you know, got to be smart everywhere else and, you know your paycheck, you know what's coming in, right, and stay on top of your money.
Yeah.
And actually, we might talk a little bit about that as far as if you have any travel deals. And yes, Rich, I might live vicariously through that because my 2017 vision board, which I remain in denial about, and I think I call not a vision board, does have travel listed on there. Not that it matters, but it might be of interest to the listeners. What was the degree in?
I majored in communication, San Diego State. Yep.
Nice. So we did want to talk about the world traveler and international man of leisure. This is actually one of the little passing conversations that we had that intrigued me at the conference. I think the conversation started because we were standing in line for the, you know, capitalizing on our income needs with the free drink coupons.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
But if I understand correctly, you quit work to go backpacking through Europe.
Correct? I did. So, yeah, I'll talk about that. I never got to study abroad in college. So I did. I was fortunate to take a trip after college. I went to Asia. I got that taste, that first taste of international travel, age of 22. And then, you know, you just get hooked on it. So, you know, a year and a half later, left the country again, went to Central America, Costa Rica. That was a blast just for like 2 weeks. That was really nice. And then, you know, I've been saving and, you know, kind of wanted that long travel experience. So, yeah.
So we don't have to go into all the justifications why, but I do have a question as far as what is the cultural experience that you're seeing out there? Because I know, I think we are all aware of, I won't go into the details of everything going on here, but what are you seeing abroad, and what would you juxtapose between the American experience and the abroad experience that you see or feel? Or does it exist? Is it like home everywhere?
Yeah, I mean, depends. I mean, definitely in the poor countries that I've been to, you definitely see that people live with a lot less and they're happy about it. Like a lot of people, you know, don't have cars or they just live with their family for years and years, right? We're all trying to get out of our family home and, you know, be independent as soon as possible. But I feel like it's much more carefree when you're from a place where you didn't necessarily have the opportunities that we have to begin with, which is a good thing. Like just for instance, in Spain, they kind of, the way they live their life is just like they work to live, right? Like not, I'm not saying everybody, but it's like, oh, you just work as little as possible to enjoy your time with your family and your leisure. And then you're not trying to hustle all the time, which kind of was a shock for me, you know, because we're brought up in a world where, you know, you got to work hard in order to play hard. You got to work for everything you have and make as much money as possible, right? Whereas there, I was like, man, it's, you know, in a way you're thinking, oh, everyone's kind of lazy, but at the same time, they seem really happy. So what is right, you know? And yeah. Maybe the way that we're living here to work 60-hour weeks, 80-hour weeks isn't right. Right. So you think about that, definitely.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. I always think about the stories that I hear from people, or actually people who often just, they live in London or they live in these other countries, and you look at their calendars and it's like they have off like 3 months a year in a lot of these countries. It's like, oh, let's see if we can get in contact with, oh no, it's some like holiday. So it definitely seems like there's a difference in terms of the way that work is viewed, or maybe it's actually a difference in the way that, you know, family and free time is viewed versus the way that work is viewed.
Yeah, yeah, they definitely, you know, a lot of these companies out in Europe, like they give like 25 vacation days off the bat, you know, that doesn't include all the bank holidays they get or anything. I'm like, it comes out to like 6 weeks of vacation for the year. You're like, man, the struggle is real here, right? Like. We had 2 weeks, if you're lucky, right? 2-3 weeks. Yeah, I mean, it's not to say that people don't work hard over there. There's some great economies over in Europe as well as in Asia. So
it sounds like you learned a lot in hindsight. Why did you make the decision to go in the first place and kind of travel abroad?
Right. Like I said, I had never got to study abroad while in school. You hear about everyone going away for 4 or 5 months. And I really wanted that experience. But just the way everything worked out, I didn't have the time to. I would have had to take out more student loans or whatever. And I didn't necessarily want to do that. So being able to save up and go out, and I did this on my own. I went solo. Besides meeting up with people here and there. Mostly I was out there for a little over 3 months, almost 3.5 months, just on my own. So,
wow.
Yeah. So that was a kind of life-changing experience for me, like putting yourself out there every day, meeting new people every day. It does get lonely too. And that's like another thing I realized. Okay. Sometimes I didn't like the feeling of, oh man, I got to hustle to make new friends every day. And you know, you want to have someone by your side, right? So yeah. That was also something I learned.
I'm pretty sure as an introvert on this side, I would have struggled tremendously with trying to make friends every single day. Bruh, I would have been exhausted. At the end of every day, I would have been exhausted and then comforted myself with the food of the region, whatever that was.
yeah, exactly.
So did you have any other epiphany moments when you were out there by yourself? And some of which you've talked about in terms of seeing the differences in culture, but were there any other moments where you were like, damn, and you had some type of realization that you found stuck with you? And it may be something that you thought of while you were there, or maybe something that you've thought of while you got back that kind of really changed your thinking.
Yeah, I mean, definitely a lot of the time I was thinking, man, like I wasn't going to come back early, but I remember thinking like I had a month to go and I was like, man, I want to get back to work. You know, I want to start contributing to society again, right? Like we're so used to. You know, for me, it was, you know, I was always in school, always working part time. And then I got out of school, worked full time, no breaks. Right. And then I'm like, oh, I'm out on my own having a good time. But at the same time, like, I want to feel like I'm contributing to society. I'm contributing to an economy. I'm putting my best foot forward to, you know, in a way, make the world a better place, whatever that may be. But not just because you meet other travelers, other backpackers out there. Like, some people travel for years. They'll like work a side job in a place or whatever, and then just keep hustling and just, you know, living like that. But yeah, I mean, I definitely was thinking, like, I'm a college educated man and want to be able to contribute, right?
Yeah, it's interesting you talk about the guilt component. I think we talked about that on another show where, well, what I'm thinking of, I think they did a study that said people feel more guilty about taking sick leave when they're actually sick than using sick leave just to have a day off from work.
Or to go interview somewhere else.
Yeah.
But, and I mean, I was talking about that with Rich. I think Rich was a little bit surprised by the comment. I mean, there's times where I'll work myself to death and then, you know, take a break because I'm, you know, because of that. And then I feel guilty for being off work, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, I earned this vacation, but yet I feel like I am, yeah, as you said, not contributing enough, like giving in my all. But really, that's more of a, or we realize that a cultural or societal pressure that, like, yo, you always got to be working, you always got to be hustling. Because, you know, I think it's just a consumerist society predominantly that I think America is. So it's interesting to hear that other perspective.
Yeah.
So, of course, my next question would be, sounds like you are, but would you do it again? And then where do you see is the next step, our next vacation place, and why?
Yeah, I would do it again, probably not for that long unless I had some footing, right? Obviously, you know, you'd like to have some passive income. You hear about everyone at FinCon just living off of their website and all these income streams that they've put into place, right? But it took hard work at first to put those passive income streams into place. And yeah, I would definitely like to do that. I'm always reading up in Reddit and looking at other travel bloggers and they're showing how they make money and just are able to just live out on their own. I definitely would like to visit South America next, Colombia, maybe Ecuador. That's hopefully on the horizon in 2017. But I want to work first and really, like I said, contribute prior to, you know, like that whole guilty thing. Like, why should I be able to take another break, right, without first doing, you know, the work?
Yeah. Yo, it sounds like the glass is always greener on the other side. It's like, we're working and I'm like, yo, I can't wait to just like not work and do absolutely nothing. And you're traveling the world, getting these enriched cultural experiences. And you're like, I can't wait to get back to work. So it seems like no matter what side you're on, it's like always greener.
Yeah. And I guess I did have a couple questions. Yeah. First of all, I liked it, especially, and I will point out for the folks didn't catch that it does take a lot of hard work. I think the quote I said is you have to work hard before you get to a point where you hardly work. So thank you for saying that as far as it relates to the passive income. You talked about you did not, and I'm proud of you, slow hand clap. I'd do that if I wasn't holding the mic because of my mic situation right now, that you did not use your school loans to pay. So did you have any tips or thoughts for people who might want to take this avenue, but maybe don't want to come out of pocket or put it on a credit card, which, you know, of course, would go against what a lot of we talk about on the show? Or did you just think in the long run, I'll take that sacrifice now because I think the travel and leisure experience, as Rich said, it's an intangible value that I want to have in my life right now. I guess I'm broad way of saying, any travel tips or savings that you found in, or you'll apply next time?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely save up, steadily put money away. I was in a fortunate situation where I was living with an ex-girlfriend at the time, so that cut my rent in half, and I had some
good, what?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, being able to pay, you know, half the rent, you know, over a period of 2 years or so, definitely helps you out on that front.
You might want to put that ebook together. I think there would be quite a few interested listeners in how to half rent in the millennial dating age. I hear a lot about that on the Twitters, but I'm going to let you cook on.
Yeah. I guess this would go against everything you're saying on the podcast, but I'm really big into, if you can afford it, put it on the credit card and then take advantage of those points, right? So that's what I did. As long as you know that you've got the cash in the bank to back it up and you're never paying a dime of interest, which is easier said than done. But I'm more of on that side. So I guess we can't agree there. But as long as you're responsible, in my opinion, you know, I've been able to really take advantage of those points. It's free money if you're responsible. If you're not, then obviously you don't want to go down that route.
Yeah, I think we're on the same page, brother, because you said not paying a dime of interest, which would imply that you're putting it on the credit card, but then you're paying it off right away.
Right.
So you're pretty much getting all the benefits of the card without the credit card company getting the benefits of your money.
Right, right. Yeah, exactly. But it's easy to, like Marcus said, get stuck in that rabbit hole of, oh yeah, just swipe, you know, rather than, you know, have that cash in hand.
Yes. And I actually do think we're on the same page. Mm-hmm. I do thank you for saying that. I think more probably be threefold now. But number one, of course, is, you know, pay it off month to month and pay cash where you can. And then number two would be to budget, as I think you're talking about, accordingly. I definitely don't. I'm not one of those deprivation and never use a credit card ever in life. It's the devil, cut them all up type of thing. I mean, they definitely serve a purpose when used correctly and responsibly. And so the reason I was going to say that is number three, as I've my thinking has either matured or evolved on this, I also kind of look at it as this is a nebulous topic, but good and bad debt as far as with bad pretty much across the board being debt carried on credit cards. And I would say this is where it gets nebulous. Good is more there's an asset tied to it. You got a subjective or intangible component or asset gained from it, which might be a degree. So a degree itself doesn't have a dollar value, but you know that's something you can benefit for the rest of your life from. So if someone had a debt burden right now, and I'd say a pool of consumer debt that consisted of a vehicle, a home, a college, and credit cards, in that order, I would always say pay the credit cards off and pay them first. So if there's ever any confusion there.
Agreed.
And another thing for travel, and I, you know, this is equally, I won't say dangerous, but equally cautious that you should approach. But I think if I was to travel and I wanted to force myself to pay it off, I'd also look at a lot of these peer-to-peer loans or a consolidation loan where there's not an asset tied to it, but it ties you down. Like you will pay this loan off in 12 months. You would pay this loan off in 36 months, 24 months, whatever the case may be. And then I would take the trip and then I would just pay the loan off. And I know when the loan is paid off, thus that trip is paid off and I can take my next trip. My fear with credit cards, they're so easy to ignore and they're usually a fixed payment of usually around 2.5 or 2%. So someone's like, I'll just pay the minimum. And then you'll be paying it till you're 57.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
A credit card.
Yeah, nah.
There's nothing else tied to how quickly you pay off that credit card other than yourself. And I like myself. I like our listeners. But, you know, we wouldn't be having this conversation if we all paid our credit cards on time. So I actually think there are other, if you're going to use debt, there's more tools available to us now that actually force us to be responsible.
Right, right. I completely agree.
So Donovan, what made you get into personal finance, man?
Yeah, man. I mean, I was listening to these podcasts, right? Mainly I was always listening to fantasy football podcasts so I can, you know, get my lineup right. We won't talk about that. So then I started diving into more business type of podcasts and I was like, okay, I want to learn how to kind of start investing, right? I'm bringing in paychecks, but I mean, I'm contributing my 401k. But other than that, you know, I didn't know anything about brokerage accounts or anything like that. So I just started going through the business podcast, like on iTunes on my iPhone. And I just started listening to like 10 different podcasts and a lot of them were talking about the same thing. And, you know, I was like, oh, like I didn't really see too many young people, right, you know, in their early 20s talking about money on these podcasts or coming on. And so I was like, okay, I can build a website and start my own blog. And so I did that. And, you know, it's been good. It's been fun, you know, kind of coming up with ways to spin these topics, right? I mean, if finance was that interesting, everybody would be into it, right? But, you know, obviously for us, you know, FinCon type of nerds, you know, it's more of a niche, right? So it's cool being able to come up with ideas. I mean, it's more or less, I'm not saying anything new. I'm, you know, I'm not reinventing the wheel, but I'm able to put my own perspective on it. And, you know, I know how young millennials think, right? And especially coming out of college, right? They're not the highest paying jobs. And, you know, you got all these other expenses too, but how do you balance it and how do you prioritize what's important? So it's been good and I really enjoy it. It's one of the things that I'm definitely most passionate about in my life, being able to take control of your money and be able to be smart with it and set yourself up for the future.
Definitely, man. And so, and this is something that we've asked other guests on the show. So was money a conversation in your household growing up? And then also is money something that you've talked about with friends or has it been more so on the taboo side?
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, growing up, we didn't have too much money. Both my parents are college educated, but we weren't you know, rolling in the dough. It was middle class family, and it wasn't exactly always easy for us. So that definitely influences me to want to be able to establish a good footing while I'm young. So when I'm, you know, able to go on and start my own family, that I'm able to, you know, have 529 college savings plan for my children, or being able to pay off my house or whatever that may be. I want to be able to establish a good foundation right now to help out others. And then as far as with my friends go, yeah, I mean, we don't really talk about it too much. Obviously, since I've created this platform, I'm getting more readers. And then they ask me like, oh yeah, like, what should I do about this? Or how should I finance this? And I'm happy to help. But no, I mean, in general, it's more me and my computer and online forums, right? not face-to-face communication with other people talking about money.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. So you said, and now I have to explore selfishly as a manager of millennials myself, and then being a millennial, but right there on that strange cusp, I only slightly understand y'all. But you said you can, or you know how young millennials think. So how do young millennials think? And I have a follow-up question, because there was an article that came out this week. And of course, all the old folks, which I guess includes me and Rich, jumped on, was millennials would quit a $100,000 job if it was boring for a $40,000 job that gave them more of their own time.
I saw that. I saw that article too. Yeah. I probably wouldn't do that.
On behalf of the millennial generation.
Yeah, I mean, $100,000 is a lot more than $40,000. So I'm not on that same page. But yeah, I mean, definitely millennials, they want that instant gratification. There's no doubt about that. You know, we want to be able to be in positions that we're not necessarily qualified for, right? But, you know, people are ambitious, right? We come from this world of, you know, social media. And like the other day, I clicked on an article and the page didn't load for like 5 seconds and I clicked away. I was like, I'm not waiting for this.
Yo, I've done that. So it definitely proves I'm on the late end of that millennial life. But I imagine somebody in an earlier generation, and they're probably going to respond to this, we're probably going to get an email. They might sit there for the 15 seconds because they can vividly remember dial-up. So they're like, eh, you know, what's another, you know, 5-10 seconds? But us? Nah, bro. I mean, I remember dial-up too, but still, if it doesn't load in like 3 to 4 seconds, I'm like, yo, F it. That's it.
Yeah, yeah, click away. So yeah, it's good. You know, we're ambitious. You know, definitely, it's pretty easy to build new skills with everything you can do with online learning and how many resources are available at our fingertips. I do think it does get overwhelming, and you know, you gotta focus on what's important to you instead of listening to all the noise that's coming at us from every which way. But yeah, I mean, does that kind of answer your question a little bit?
It does. So you seem to have validated one about the instant gratification. So I have to kind of change my follow-up question. What do you think would be the biggest and then the most inaccurate stereotype about millennials? They come from other generations or just from other people, other sources.
Oh man, that's hard to say because, you know, I can't speak on behalf of all young people here. Yep. But
too late now.
Yeah, yeah. Let's see. I did hear, you know, that we're entitled, right? And while I do think that is the case, you know, I think people are more aware of their worth. If you've got skills and you can prove it, you can back it up, why not be able to ask for more or validate that with more pay or whatever it may be? Just because you're young, it doesn't put you in a position where you're less than somebody else. Does that make sense?
It does. And I've, in defense of millennials, because sometimes I feel that I have to defend it, if only as an extension of defending myself, but playing devil's advocate, first of all, we were raised by the people who are lecturing us now. So the boomers, and I think the greatest generation raised the boomers, but the boomers and some X's in this case, Generation X. Generation X just gets left out of conversations, actually. I just kind of feel
sorry. Yeah, they really do.
They're just this little niche. I kind of feel sorry for it because you never really hear about them. But I know some of those are in the manager ranks now, and they're like, you know, these gosh darn millennials, they won't take this stagnated pay that we paid people in 1996 and they haven't got a raise since their parents were 15. Like, God, I don't want to hear about it again. But I'm like, that doesn't make any sense. So the argument is not that the complaints are right. It's that I don't want to hear the complaints. I'm like, but these complaints are valid. So that makes it difficult for me to be like, because, you know, you get the marching orders from the higher ups of the powers that be. And they're like, hey, man, go get those millennials to shut up. I'm like, those millennials are right. I can't do that. And then I struggle because, you know, maybe being on that, I respect the hierarchy. And I think you come up at a, I was like, as Rich said, I came up, I think the first time we got dial up in our house, I remember because I sat at the computer and then I specifically went to, I won't say the first search that I got on the internet, but it probably won't surprise some folks.
Yeah, I was getting a little nervous, but.
It took a very long time to download. I just put it that way. And it wasn't music. And anyway, and so like, I still remember like the excitement of getting the internet installed. Like they brought it out in a, like a package that would probably be the equivalent of how the iPhone is wrapped today. And we're like, oh, a modem. Oh. I think angels literally screamed around us as we put it up. We're like, oh, you know, we connected to the internet.
It was an experience back then.
Yeah, man. Yeah, it was magical. Like the family gathered around the modem. Dead serious. Yeah, and then I ordered internet recently. I just switched providers, actually, which as a quick money saving tip for this week, since I haven't done that recently, see if you can get better internet service, folks. I save $40 a month simply by switching my internet plan. And no one even came out. Like they mailed it to me. They're like, man, you know how to set this up, bro. I'm like, I guess. They're like, yeah, we'll send it to you in the mail, son. And I'm like, okay. I get here. It had like a 3-step instruction. Plug me in. Turn me on, fool. I'm like, what is going on? Like, I didn't even really feel validated that I had. And everything worked. It actually made me upset how easy it was. And it kind of makes me wonder what, like, cable service providers do anymore. Because if I can just plug it in, it turns on. Anyway, that being said, so that was, like, the change in the internet garnering experience now. And that's only been 20 years. I mean, I say only, that's like, some people probably just fell out of their chair right now. Dear God, 20 years. You know? But I mean, that is a lot to change where it used to be a familial experience to get the internet versus you plug in your modem and you, not only do I have internet, I have Wi-Fi, which didn't even exist back then.
Yeah. And also, Donovan, I was thinking about what you said is that people are more aware of their worth now, which makes sense in the internet era because there's just more information publicly available. Like you can just go online, you can go to a salary.com or one of these other sites, and you can get a sense of what you're actually worth. And then you also have all of these other people who are talking about what they're worth. You see people like the, you know, like the Pat Flynn and some of the other folks who are out there who are bringing in over $100,000 in revenue per month. Now, of course, there's like the after tax and after expenses component of it, but still to see someone bringing in that much revenue per month, it's naturally going to make people say like, yo, am I really doing the most that I could be doing? And I think for this generation, that answer is a resounding no. I mean, there are still a lot of people who are perfectly content to go work a day job. They don't want to have a side hustle. They don't want to start their own business. They just want to get that check and get out. But for the rest of us, a lot of us, we see all of this information. And even in the social media era, too, where you see people coming up, you know, everyone's winning. It constantly has people questioning if they're really getting the most out of their situation. So would you say that social media also plays a bit of a role in that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, you're always keeping tabs on everybody else. What are they doing now? It's so easy to keep up on like, oh, like it doesn't even matter if you run into someone at a bar or something like, oh, I haven't seen you in a while. Well, I know exactly what you're doing because I'm on your Instagram and Facebook. I mean, like I could tell you what you did last weekend, right? So definitely, you know, social media plays a big role in that. And you definitely want to be in a way, in a sense, like keeping up with the Joneses. But I think it's good in a way because it makes you stay on your toes, right? You're not just sitting on the sidelines, like waiting and twiddling your fingers. You're actually like, oh, that little sense of competition, you know, big sports guy growing up and always try to remain competitive. It's like, okay, what am I going to do to better myself? Right. Cause you know, you don't want to get left behind. So in a way I think social media does play a good role, but at the same time, obviously the other side of the coin, that comparing yourself to others and not being content with your own life and not being fulfilled is also the bad part of it. So you got to kind of find a good balance between the two.
Yeah, I have one example because I watch a lot of basketball out here. I'm in the Bay Area, so watch Golden State. And there's this commercial, and I'm not sure if they show this in other markets.
Humble brag.
I mean, hey, I just said I watched the team. I didn't say go. Anyway.
I don't remember you mentioning Golden State in the last 3 years of podcasting, but all right, go ahead.
Hop on that bandwagon.
But they did blow a 3-1 lead in the final, which I know someone's going to say that in the tweets after this episode is out. So I just got to put that out there. But this commercial, it's like this dad and his son, and they're like on a tablet or something, and they see that their next door neighbors are at the basketball game. And he's like, how come the Johnsons are at the game? And so he goes on like NBA.com, buys tickets, and then they go to the game. As they're watching the game, they get up to leave to go to the game. Now, when I go on NBA.com and I look at the resale price of Warrior tickets, I'm like, that ain't cheap, bruh. And I'm like, yo, that is the expensive cost of social media. And I'm sure that's not what they intended with that commercial. But the dude looked, saw that his neighbors were at the game, then decided he was going to probably fork over a grand or some insane amount of money to then take his son to the game just so he could stunt and say he was there. So that's like this whole social media, the downside, and I guess in some ways, maybe even the positive side of it combined into one commercial. It just gave life to everything to me.
Yeah. I know exactly what commercial you're talking
about. Yeah, exactly. I'm about to say, I've seen that commercial as well. I didn't know it was that wide ranging. I guess they just wanted to piss off everybody in the country instead of just in the region.
Yo, you know something? If I wasn't doing stuff in the personal finance space, I probably wouldn't think anything of it. But I'm like, yo, if this isn't the most millennial ass commercial that I've ever seen.
Yeah, definitely, man. It's just like, let's go.
You know, speaking of which, and that's one point that I wanted to highlight here is I feel like on the dark side, again, you know, I think social media has plenty of positive contributions. And honestly, on the grand scheme, I think social media, when you take a step back from it, is actually pretty amazing. I think there's like 95% positive that comes from social media. But like most things, that's why they have customer complaint lines. We focus on the 5 to 10% negative. And I say that because one thing that I think is so glaring, and I think we're talking about here, is social media exposes the hypocrisy of everything. So people are like, oh, work hard and play nice and look out for thy neighbor. And then you look on social media and there's some dude like spitting on money and like throwing it on people. And they're like happy to get hit in the face with it. And it's like this is blatantly different than what like the standard that we say that we have some for ourselves. And another extension of that is, I think what's hard for, especially I think younger millennials, and I see this a lot, is you can click online and see someone your age literally getting paid to be themselves. They don't have a talent. They're not working a 9-to-5. They're not traveling. Their job is to be themselves. And like, that is hard as hell. Like I got more so like on family and friends side. I try to explain that. They're like, well, you know, what's his name gets paid for being himself. And I'm like, man, I got nothing. There's no comeback to that. Like, I'm like, yeah, you're right. And the example I thought of is when Vine went down or crashed or whatever, and they talked to, I read a lot of the stories or a few of the stories about why it went down. It's because a lot of the top contributors walked away. And one of them was quoted that, hey, we're not upset. Every successful Vine person is a millionaire now. And I'm sure that's an overstatement, but I did not realize they were making that type of money as far as all the sponsorships and the deals and the club promos. And I'm looking at, these are 7-second videos.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Like, and I don't know how a 9-to-5 or a traditional standard competes with that. Like, hey, come sit in this cubicle and be miserable for 40 hours a week for 1/3 the pay, or on your free time, make a 7-second video and be a millionaire. Like, that's not, you know, that's not a competition. I don't know how those two worlds compete and collide with one another. Are you seeing something along those lines among your friends and peers? It's like, I just want to blow up right now. I don't have time for this building and work my way up the chain of man, climbing my way up the corporate ladder. I want to be rich yesterday.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I don't really hang out with too many social media stars. Yeah. I mean, it'd be cool, right? But you do have to think like it takes time for them to build that audience. It's not just a 7-second video, right? They got to come up with the ideas. They got to build that following on Twitter and Instagram. And
that's a good point.
And you know, be marketing themselves constantly, you know, the constant promotion, right? And then you only see, you know, what you see, right? But no, I mean, I think people understand that, you know, everything takes hard work. No one's just going to blow up. I saw that guy, King Batch or Andrew Batchelor, he like wore like the Jimmy John shirt. You know, the sandwich shop.
Yeah.
And yeah, they paid him $300,000.
Wait. To wear the shirt?
To wear the shirt. In like 3 videos, in like 3 vines, he wore the shirt. They paid him like $300,000 to wear it.
Bruh.
Yeah. Because he's got like 10 million followers on there. So, I mean, his voice is huge, right? But yeah, and then now they're internet famous. So they're getting noticed everywhere around the world. But it does take that hard work. They're not working a 9-to-5, but they're social media masters, right? And it takes time to build those skills.
Yo, bro, when you said $300,000, I threw my proverbial hat in the air like Bobby Shmurda, man.
Right?
Yeah, I was about to turn my webcam on right now. I'm going about life all go. Or why are we not recording right now? So I also want to talk a little bit about, for the people who kind of get towards the wrap up here, is the adaptableadult.com, which we'll have in the show notes, folks. But why'd you start the website and what do you hope to accomplish?
Yeah, I mean, I started the website just to, you know, put my own thoughts on my own platform and be able to help out millennials make better financial decisions. And I hope to continue doing that and hopefully soon start getting in a video, because I know what I like to see. I mean, I like reading all day, but, you know, if I can just click on a video and just, you know, chill and watch something, you know, I know that message. I gravitate toward those messages a lot as well.
You want that 300K, bro. I know what you want. You want that 300K for that t-shirt.
Yeah.
It's all good. I respect it.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Right. So I just know, like, what, you know, Snapchat, Instagram is, you know, what people my age and especially the younger generations, what are they calling them now? Gen Z? Like the.
I honestly have no idea.
Yeah.
You're the expert.
Yeah, no, not expert at all. But yeah, I mean, you know, these little kids growing up with iPads in their cribs, these are the eyeballs that we gotta to market to, right? So what's working with them, you know, definitely would like to be my focus, right? And I guess if I were being transparent here, and you know, you guys know, you run your podcast, it's that constant, like, maybe you're not seeing instant results, right? And you're out on your own, right? It's that pushing yourself, being a self-starter to continually produce content and come up with fresh ideas, or at least spin them in a way where you can relate with people, right? So yeah, that's something that when I'm coming up with ideas, like, okay, how am I going to make this interesting? And I'll shoot like an article over to my friend and they're like, no, I don't like that. But, you know, you need to hear that feedback and hear that honesty in order to push yourself to the next level.
If you're like me, you probably hate grocery shopping. And if you're like me, you probably hate figuring out dinner every night. And that's where HelloFresh comes into play. So HelloFresh is the meal kit delivery service that makes cooking fun, easy, and convenient. Each week, HelloFresh creates new recipes with step-by-step instructions designed to take around 30 minutes for everyone from novice chefs like myself to seasoned home cooks. And one of the best things about this is if you're cooking just for yourself, each meal could last you 2 days. I discovered that when I was making this sizzling beef stir fry last week. I promise you, it really was sizzling. And if you're wondering how the food gets delivered, it arrives at your doorstep in a special insulated box for free. So for $35 off your first week of deliveries, visit HelloFresh.com and enter paychecks. Again, visit HelloFresh.com and enter paychecks when you subscribe. Check it out. Yeah, it's interesting what you say about video, because I've read so much about the rise of video, but I know for myself, like, I suck at watching video. Like, I feel like I'm so busy at work or just in general that I like stopping to watch like a 5 or a 10 minute video. Like, I just can't do it, but video continues to be on the rise and it continues to be the premier thing. So what do you think it is about video that makes it so interesting? And when are you watching the video? Like to me, I'm like, yo, I can't stop a presentation or stop in a TPS report to watch like a video on YouTube, but yet people find the time.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I'm not generally too much on YouTube, to be honest. With Instagram now, the videos can be like up to 1 minute long or like shorter. Mm-hmm. Right. So being able to compress that content into 1 minute or shorter video, that grabs my attention. Right. And I think like that's the way to go. Right. Like, yeah, you don't have the time to watch a 5 minute video, but 30 seconds to a minute, you know, like when you're walking to the bathroom or something, is manageable. Right. So, yeah, being able to just like a quick hitters with the content, you know, I've been following people from FinCon on their Instagram and I've seen some nice stuff where they're just giving quick financial tips. Oh, check out how I've saved here or whatever. And I think that really grabs people's attention. At least it grabs my attention. I know it works for me, but, you know, obviously audio as well, which is your platform. So, I mean, it just kind of depends on how you learn and what you like to pay attention to.
Definitely.
So I got two questions. young people who are struggling to start saving or who think they don't have enough to save? Have you found any budgeting tips or saving apps that keep you on point?
I definitely use Mint.com. I'm a big proponent of that. I'm always checking that out. For saving, yeah, Mint. I've checked out Acorns and I've been using that a little bit, right? I heard you talk about that, Rich. You know, in the background, right? Yeah, Mint is my go-to where I'm able to see how I'm spending. But I don't know. I mean, I've kind of been able to learn to live with less. I mean, especially while I was traveling, like I was just staying in hostels or, you know, just riding around with a few t-shirts and shorts and with some sandals. And, you know, it's kind of, you know, I can't just be going out and spending $50 on sushi, right? Like, this is not something you can do, right? Like, so just being able to know what's coming in. And I think over time, like, I've been able to be like, okay, you know, I like to have fun, right? I'm not the most frugal person in the world, not like counting pennies. But as far as, you know, I've been able to live within my means. Right. And that takes time. Definitely for millennials, especially, my advice would be, you know, don't pay attention to what your friends are doing. Right. Because your friends are always going to, you know, want to spend money or have fun. But you got to pay attention to what's important to you. Right. So, you know, that definitely helped me save up to travel as well. So
that's a really important point, man. And I just want to say, there's kind of what the people are doing, and it's kind of how we talked about looking at social media, and it can be inspirational in some context, and then in other contexts, not so much. But having that greater vision, and this is something that I don't think I did when I was younger, Marcus. I don't know about you. I'm guessing by what's in the book, probably not. But actually, just like thinking, you know, what do I want to do 1 year, 2 year, 3 years? What do I want to do 6 months from now? And I know in your case, Marcus, once you did make that decision that you were going to get out of debt by age 30, that plan came, you know, much easier. But for a lot of people, I don't think that they think that far ahead, you know?
Well, what I was going to say is, and I actually wrote down here, is practice makes perfect. When I was, and I was not, to answer your question, yeah, I definitely wasn't on this level at 25. It took me about another, 25, I think I was coming around. From 22 to 25, that was dark. But that being said, I think what people struggle with, even though they do it all the time and don't realize it, is the habits we form. So when I was out there spending money, making it rain, buying bottles and, you know, getting lit, it was actually insane for me to think of saving and being responsible. But when I started being saving and being responsible, and I got into the habit of creating a budget and following where my money was going and creating a plan to get out of debt. It became just as crazy for me to spend money and wild out. Like, I'd be at the club, people like, oh, bottles, I know how you do. I'm like, nah, man, you know how much that is at the, it's $29.99 at the store, man. They talk about $250. You know, that's $274. You put that in an interest bearing account, man. That'd be like, I start going on a little rant, because now it's just as crazy for me to break the habit of being responsible. And, you know, the first step, start, road, whatever metaphor you want to use to any journey, is the start. And I think that's really, I've underestimated how difficult that is for people to get. Like, you know, like, how do you do it? Where do you start? And I'm like, by starting and then making it habit forming. And it will take time. It is a new experience. You are learning to do the opposite of what you have been doing possibly for days, months, or years in some instances. I'm not saying it's easy, but once you get into those habits, it'll be just as crazy as you for you to think about spending money after when you start seeing your savings account grow and your credit card going down, your debit account going up. And when somebody asks you to go out, you'll be offended. You know what kind of plan I'm on? You know what I'm trying to do with my life? Like, you'll start to lecture them. And it'll be just as easy for you to be responsible once you learn and put those habits in place.
And then people won't ask you to go anywhere.
That's a natural extension as well. So, Donovan, where can the people find you? Where on the social medias?
Yeah. You can find me on Twitter at AdaptableAdult. They didn't let me have the. So it's at AdaptableAdult. Or you can subscribe to theadaptableadult.com. I'm posting articles, trying to get better at posting consistently, right? And you're definitely going in 2017, really ramp that up and get more focused on building my brand, right? Like everything we talked about at FinCon, getting in front of more eyeballs and really networking with others.
Now, you did mention that you were able to flip a couple of conversations, or maybe a conversation at FinCon, into freelance work. And so sometimes we talk a little bit about going to conferences and the importance of that. So any words for people who've been kind of outside of the conference lane as far as the field that they're in or don't really see value? Because it sounds like it was the opposite experience for you, where you went, you learned a lot, and you got value. So any words for people who are on the fence about whether they should attend a conference that's related to something that they want to do?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I mean, whether these conferences could get pricey, right? So, I mean, that's obviously a big factor. And you got a few extra $100 lying around. But yeah, I mean, if they turn into opportunities like it did for me at FinCon, where I was able to learn a lot and you know, get some freelance writing jobs that are continuing, and that could be worth it. And then there's also, you know, check out, you know, meetup.com for, you know, networking events going on in your area that, you know, could be as cheap as, they could be free, or they could be probably the ones that are paid, like, you know, maybe 15, 25 bucks. You'll get more value because people are actually investing to go to these things, right? Something free is, you may not necessarily find the value, but if people are paying and you know, paying to go meet other people, then they want to hear how you can help them out. So whatever you can offer, don't be selfish. Just kind of going into it like, you know, you kind of got to give to get, right? So have something to offer. Don't just be like, oh, hey, like, I can help you out. You know, be specific, right? Like what Letitia was talking about. So, oh, I'm really good at social media, not just here's my resume or let me know, you know, because, you know, so yeah. Definitely check those out, the local events, wherever you live.
Evelyn, so thank you for coming on the show. We want to thank the people for listening. If you have topics you'd like to hear us cover or thoughts on an episode, you, of course, can email us at info@paychecksandbalances.com.
And don't forget to join our email list, where we share top articles we read throughout the week, work and money tips, and a lot more. You can sign up by visiting paychecksandbalances.com/email. And also, the PNB First Annual Listener/Audience Survey is out there. Take that if you haven't taken it. paychecksandbalances.com/survey. And again, we want to thank Donovan for coming on the show, you for listening, and until next time, be safe. We out. Peace.